Hello and welcome to the Indiana Lawyer Podcast, your source for news in Hoosier law, brought to you by Taft. I'm Alexa Shrake, Indiana Lawyer Reporter, and your host this week. As always, I'm here in our Monument Circle studio with Managing Editor Daniel Carson and Reporter Mara Johnson to give you the rundown on the latest legal news. Plus, I chat with President and CEO of the Indiana Bar Foundation, Chuck Dunlap, about some key takeaways from the Civic Summit held last week. So, let's get started. Today is Wednesday, April 17th, 2024, and these are your headlines. To start, Daniel, a man has been sentenced for his role in a mall shooting. What more can you tell us?
An Indianapolis man has been sentenced to 4 years in prison, with three executed, for his role in a 2023 shooting at Castleton Square Mall. The Marion County Prosecutor's Office announced that Curtis Wilson has been sentenced for the February 17, 2023 shooting at the mall. In February, Curtis Wilson was found guilty at trial of two counts of criminal recklessness. Authorities said that on the day of the shooting, Wilson and a group of friends went to the mall where they encountered another group that they had previously had disagreements with. When the two groups encountered each other, Wilson grabbed a firearm from his brother's hip and chased the group out of the mall where an exchange of gunfire occurred. Wilson sustained a gunshot wound to the leg during the shooting. No one else was injured. Quote, "We will not tolerate young people acting recklessly and endangering others in public, especially when there are firearms involved," Marion County Prosecutor Ryan Mears said about the sentence. "We are lucky that no one else was injured during this incident. I am thankful for the quick action of law enforcement and the businesses and witnesses that aided in the successful prosecution." Now over to Mara for a story about another sentencing, with this one involving a federal armed robbery case.
An Indianapolis man was sentenced to 29 years in federal prison after committing armed robbery at six Indianapolis restaurants and shooting at an employee. 25-year-old Lamont Vales pleaded guilty to six counts of interference with commerce by robbery, two counts of brandishing a firearm in furtherance of a crime of violence, and one count of discharging a firearm in furtherance of a crime of violence. The sentencing comes more than 4 years after his robbery streak, which began in December 2019. According to court documents, Vales robbed six Arby's and Subway restaurants at gunpoint between December 29, 2019 and January 22, 2020. During one of those robberies, Vales reportedly fired four shots at an employee who chased after him. The employee was not physically injured in the incident. At the time of his arrest, Vales had been convicted of carrying a handgun without a license. He also has a pending charge for battery resulting in serious bodily injury.
Staying in Indianapolis, Mara, you have news on a former IMPD officer facing criminal charges.
A former officer with the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department was charged with rape and other offenses for an alleged sexual assault that took place while he was on duty in early January. 27-year-old Myron Howard was also charged with improper sexual conduct in a separate incident that allegedly occurred in August 2023. During the January 6, 2024 incident, authorities say Howard and other police officers were responding to a domestic violence report. Later that night, Howard allegedly returned to the house and a sexual assault occurred. The victim told investigators she let Howard into the house because she trusted him as a police officer. She said she felt obligated to do what Howard asked because he threatened to press charges against her. Howard said the victim came on to him. Authorities say Howard was still on duty at the time of the assault and reportedly turned off his body-worn camera during it. When asked if having sex on duty was something he did frequently, Howard said it wasn't, but that he's done it at IMPD and when he worked for the Yorktown and Anderson Police Departments. During the investigation into the January sexual assault, investigators learned that on August 15, 2023, Howard investigated a crash and afterwards returned to the scene and offered a woman involved a ride home in exchange for sex, according to police reports.
The Indiana Court of Appeals recently ruled the Bureau of Motor Vehicles does not have to include a third gender option on driver's licenses. The lawsuit came in 2023 after the BMV denied appellees applications seeking the gender indicator of X. The complaint alleged violations of the Administrative Rules and Procedures Act, the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection and Due Process Clauses, and the First Amendment. The Monroe Circuit Court granted the motion to the First Amendment claim but denied the rest of the motion. It also denied the BMV's motion for summary judgment and granted the appellee's petition for judicial review and motion for summary judgment. However, the appellate court found the trial court erred in granting the summary judgment for the appellees on their substantive due process claim. The court remanded the case with instruction to dissolve the injunction against the B&B and enter summary judgment and declaratory judgment for the B&B consistent with the opinion. In a separate case, the appellate court upheld an injunction against the state's abortion ban but wants it to be narrower. The American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana filed a lawsuit on behalf of the group Hoosier Jews for Choice, as well as anonymous practitioners of several other religious groups. The American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana filed a lawsuit on behalf of the group Hoosier Jews for Choice, as well as anonymous practitioners of several other religious groups that hold belief systems that allow abortion under circumstances outside Senate-enrolled Act 1's exceptions. SEA 1 bans abortion in Indiana except in limited cases of rape, incest, fatal fetal anomaly, or to protect the life or health of the mother. The Marion Superior Court issued the preliminary injunction against the near total abortion ban in December 2022, as well as certified the case as a class action. The appellate court upheld the injunction, but ordered it to be more narrow. Maura, you have news from the high court. What's happening there?
The Indiana Supreme Court established a 23-member Commission on Indiana's Legal Future to address an attorney shortage across the state. According to the 2023 American Bar Association profile of the legal profession, Indiana has the 44th lowest number of attorneys per capita at only 2.3 per 1,000 residents. The lowest number reported among the states is 2.1 lawyers per 1,000 in Idaho, Arizona, and South Carolina. The shortage is more severe in some rural counties, particularly as baby boomers continue to retire. The commission, led by Court of Appeals Judge Nancy Vadick, and Supreme Court Chief Administrative Officer Justin Faulkner, also includes members of each branch of government, judges, and lawyers. The group will work to make recommendations to the court on how to resolve the shortage. A written report is expected by next July, but interim recommendations will be offered by August 1st of this year.
We'll keep you updated on news about the commission and its work to address the attorney shortage in this state. Indiana Attorney General Todd Urquita announced last week that his office filed a lawsuit against 22 companies for producing forever chemicals. The lawsuit that was filed in Shelby County accuses the companies of making substances they knew could have a toxic impact on Indiana's drinking water and natural resources. The substances are used in the making of nonstick cookware, stain-resistant carpets and clothing, and firefighting foam. The lawsuit further alleges the companies have violated state and federal environmental regulations in addition to the Indiana Deceptive Consumer Sales Act and the Indiana Product Liability Act. The state is requesting an injunction against the defendants from any other actions that will damage the state through the use of substances, as well as a jury trial. And finally, to wrap up this week's headlines, Daniel, tell us about what you're working on for our next print issue.
In our next issue, I will have a story that looks at the Community Justice Center campus in the Twin Ear neighborhood and whether the moving of courts and some county agencies to the area has resulted in new business and office development, plus how it's impacted law firms and businesses that reside downtown near the city-county building. You can read all about it in our April 27th issue.
Okay, that'll do it for this week's headlines. As always, if you want more legal news, check us out at theindianalawyer.com. Stick around after our sponsor break to hear my interview with Chuck Dunlap.
Taft, today's modern law firm. At Taft, we cultivate a highly respectful, transparent workplace that fosters creativity, teamwork, inclusion, and diversity. We couple our culture with a client-first approach, rewarding lawyers who understand their clients' goals and work to deliver success. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
I have with me today President and CEO of the Indiana Bar Foundation, Chuck Dunlap. Last week was the annual Civic Summit. The one-day conference includes civic leaders to help bring awareness, collaboration, and amplification of the positive impact and outreach of civics across the state. So to start, Chuck, how was the summit last week?
It was great. It was our second, as you said, iteration of it. So we learned a few things from the first version, but it was really great. We focused on, we started with the Indiana Civic Health Index, which came out in January, looking at sort of Indiana's general civic health on a variety of metrics, kind of updated people on that. And then we really focused in on the main recommendation, which was to, which is to include and focus on youth voter registration. And it's a very timely topic, certainly, between now and October. And so that was the main focus. And we discussed a lot of things around that particular recommendation.
You were on the panel discussing the 2023 Civic Health Index. You know, what were some of the big things discussed there, especially considering, you know, we're in a big election year?
Yeah. And you look at the metrics for Indiana Civic Health. And like a lot of things, kind of a report card, we do some things well, and we've done some things well with civic education, some of the opportunities we've had with the new sixth grade civics course that just started this January, and this most recent legislative session, the Excellence in Civics seal designation that's coming out with the Department of Education for high school students in schools. So that's great news. One of the difficult lagging indicators, I guess, is the voting, and the voting metrics aren't great in Indiana. And so that's one of the reasons we wanted to really focus in on that. Again, it's a presidential election year, so there's a lot of attention being paid to that. One of the things that is a benefit in a way, too, though, is the process of registering to vote. Indiana has made it fairly straightforward that if you have a driver's license or ID, it's pretty easy to go online and register to vote. So that's one of the areas that we're going to be working on between now and the registration deadline before the November election.
So what are some of the key takeaways from the summit?
So a lot of the summit, again, it's fairly new. It's about a year old. A year ago, we launched the creation of the summit. So some of it was toolkits for how do we as a group collaborate with each other? How do we amplify our messages to the broader community? And how do we work together on areas of interest that around civics and civic engagement that we can partner with and again, maximize the impact? So there were some of that. Some of the we had a media panel and talked about how do we send that message, but really we focused a lot around youth engagement specifically with a registration recommendation. And as much as I might think I'm more in the youth demographic than I really am, different communication methods change, and how and where you're able to reach that audience has changed. And so that's one of the things we talked about is what is the best way from a strategic standpoint to reach 18 to 22 year old Hoosiers around the state of Indiana who maybe haven't yet registered and try to get them, encourage them to register, because obviously they can't vote if they don't register. So that's kind of the precursor. So that was a lot of the discussion too, is to how do you reach folks and really send the message of why it's important to do this. And then the technical process, it's fairly easy to do it, but there's a little bit around that too. So that was one of the various aspects around youth engagement that we talked about.
How was this year's summit different than, you know, last year's?
Last year, again, the first one we had a lot of panels talking about civics through different lenses, civics from the business community, civics from the legal profession and various other things, which was really great. One of the things we heard about, though, was we really would like to have some more hands-on sort of group interactive dynamics. And so we had a panel, well, there wasn't a panel, but it was an opportunity to talk with educators, teachers, superintendents about what they need within their school setting in order to teach civics, engage with the community, and how the larger community can be a resource to the schools. And that was really effective. We've heard so far some really good feedback about that particular panel, because a lot of times the teachers and the school educators are doing what they're doing on their daily basis, and the community people are doing what they're doing. And it seems difficult sometimes to get into schools and to be able to interact and support that work and to reinforce that work of civics and civic engagement in what does that mean within your local community. And so that was really helpful. And we heard a lot of good comments and feedback about that, understanding how the community can fit into supporting that effort that the teachers are. And the teachers welcome it. The educators welcome it because they like to have real world examples and opportunities for their students to engage as well.
You know, what are some of the things that we can expect to see from the Indiana Bar Foundation this year?
Yeah, so a lot of the same themes you'll be seeing from us in the course of the next few months. And we have a set timeline with voter registration because of the, there are deadlines and things that we're going to be working through. So
this was sort of the launch last week at the summit, was kind of the launch of, we created a voter registration toolkit. And so we're going to be doing a lot with community partners and other supporters, members of the coalition or not yet members of the coalition, to try to have, it's not just about the Barr Foundation. We're certainly active and engaged in this area, but we're only able to do so much. But together through this coalition and through other people helping to support that work, we can do so much more. And so that's really the focus that we're adopting, is to look for partners, create and to continue to leverage the partnerships that we have and create new ones to be able to focus on youth engagement, specifically around the, again, nonpartisan voter registration efforts. That'll keep us busy probably for a little while. And the other thing, that we have a program called Indiana Kids Election, and it is aligned with Indiana standards. And it's essentially a mock election process that is in the schools. And we're going to have that this fall leading up to the presidential election in November. So a lot of this is really building that program as a really good way and a springboard to then, for those that are eligible, 17-year-olds who will be 18 before the election can register to vote, and 18-year-olds the senior year and some junior year of high school, being able to use that program as a way to educate people about voting, which is great, but also take that next step and help get the people who are eligible to register to register as well. So through that process, through the Indiana Kids Election Program, we're going to be expanding it into areas where we can have those mock elections and talk about various lesson plans and things around that based on Indiana standards, but also take the next step and bring it into the real world and help to get people registered who are able to.
You know, do you have any updates? I feel like every time I see you, I always ask, you know, how are the kiosks?
Yes. So, yeah, we have a lot going on at the Indiana Barr Foundation. Certainly the civics initiatives, our summit we just had. I just got back from Washington, D.C., where we had two Indiana teams competing. They're still competing, in fact. I don't know the results yet as of right now, in the We the People national competition. And then on the other side of our mission is sort of access to civil legal assistance and civil legal services. And as you mentioned, the kiosks. Actually, today, this morning, we just launched the phone support option for our Indiana legal help navigators. So those navigators who are helping people, again, non-lawyers, for giving legal information out, there's many ways to reach them, email, text, chat, various other things. But this morning, we launched the phone option. So that was a pretty big undertaking for us. But from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock every Monday through Friday for housing issues, and hopefully these will be expanded, they're able now to call and speak to a navigator on the phone from a kiosk or really anywhere. It could be anywhere they're accessing Indiana legal help, could be from their computer or anywhere else. So that's now a new functionality that we have too, and we have some learning to do around that, and we'll be moving that forward and rolling it out more. And again, hopefully the idea is to expand these services too. So that's an exciting opportunity this morning.
Yeah, that's great. You kind of mentioned this, you know, earlier in my questions about the sixth grade requirement. You know, how has that been?
It's great. It's hard to believe it. I mean, sometimes time has a different effect, either slow or fast. But we launched and rolled out the resources that we created around the sixth grade civics class in December. And we basically took every single Indiana standard and we built specific lesson plans and vocabulary and PowerPoint presentations. And we engaged with teachers to help us develop those things. And we put it on our website and we said, here is a sort of off-the-shelf resource guide, resource tools that you can use to teach sixth grade civics, all again based on the Indiana standards as they were promulgated by the Department of Education and others. So we have had, I believe, last I heard, over 10,000 downloads of those since December. So we're really excited about that. Teachers are using them. I think it's been a big help to support teachers. And it's a new thing. This is the first time, certainly in Indiana recently, we've had a sixth grade standalone full semester of civics. And which is an amazing opportunity. One of the things that we're really trying to do is to support the teachers with those resources. And so this was one of our efforts to do that. Another one that we also launched in January, one area of the standards that doesn't always get the most attention are state and local government standards and state and local government resources. So we partnered with the Indiana Chamber of Commerce to develop, actually it was a publication that they have done in the past. This is Your Indiana Government. But we refined it, we updated it, and we aligned it with Indiana standards so that teachers can use that as a new resource, also for free, available on our website, in order to focus in on those Indiana-specific standards. So it talks about townships and local government and what is the structure and the state of Indiana on, you know, the budget and all those kinds of things that really impact people in their daily lives and meets those Indiana standards. So those are two really brand new resources that we're excited to have for those sixth grade teachers and anybody, frankly, but certainly it's aligned to the sixth grade and other school standards. So that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What has the feedback been on that, like from teachers?
It's been really positive. And again, we haven't done a formal sort of survey yet, but it is something we wanted to get out there. But we've heard really good things from the teachers on both of those resources. And I think sometimes teachers feel like, you know, they're out there by themselves doing these things, and we want them to know that we are strong supporters of their work. We want to partner with them and give them the tools that they can use to successfully accomplish this this new course. And it's as good as the resources that they have. We're also expanding some of our professional development around this. We'll continue to have our Summer Institute this summer in Bloomington. So, which is, again, all of these resources are available for free to teachers, including our Summer Institute. We also have a program that's focused on middle school teachers at high need schools. And we're gonna have a year-long cohort. We did it last year. We're going to do it again this year, where we're going to take them to Philadelphia for about 5 days, immerse them in civics and educational tools and resources. We're going to be housed at the National Constitution Center, which is kind enough to partner with us to sort of host us there. We're also partnering with the state of Ohio and West Virginia. So it's going to be a cohort of three states. And again, it's all free resources that teachers can use. And we have several other professional development opportunities. Some are going to be around original source documents. So we're partnering with the Remnant Trust, which is a local group that has an amazing collection of historic documents around civics. And it's available here in Indianapolis, and they travel around the country, certainly. But we're going to be able to have the teachers talk about things like the Federalist Papers and literally hold a first edition copy of that document in their hands as well, in addition to others. So it's really exciting to see those partnerships take place. And again, getting word out to the teachers about the resources that we have available and how we want to support them. That's one of the biggest things that we appreciate the opportunity to do that.
Well, that's great. It's all very exciting things.
We're excited about it. I hope others are too.
Yeah. Well, that'll do for this week's interview. Chuck, thank you again for joining me today. And to our listeners, head over to theindianalawyer.com to hear our past interviews. You can also find us on your favorite podcast apps. We'll talk to you soon.